It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Mali records its second Ebola victim. Another Sierra Leonean doctor falls ill to the deadly virus. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Mali Tuesday confirmed its second case of the deadly Ebola virus. A nurse caring for a patient from Guinea has died. The announcement came as authorities were about to lift a quarantine restriction on more than 100 people put at risk by a 2-year-old girl with the disease who came to the country from Guinea. Meanwhile, Sierra Leone suffered another doctor falling ill to the virus. Dr. Martin Salia, a surgeon at a major Freetown hospital, is now the sixth physician to test positive for Ebola. The government also announced it's making one-time payments of $5,000 to the families of any health worker who dies as a result of treating Ebola patients. Uganda Tuesday declared itself free of the Ebola-like Marburg virus after completing a 42-day surveillance period. A medical technician died from Marburg September 28th after falling ill at a Kampala hospital. It has the same effect as Ebola and has the same 21-day incubation period. Israeli officials announced they're sending equipment and medical supplies to West Africa to combat Ebola, including portable field hospitals. Gil Heskel heads Mashaf, the Israeli Agency for International Aid and Development.
We are sending staff that will construct the clinics, and we are donating these clinics to the three governments. In addition, we are putting in touch Israeli NGOs with the local governments in order for them to send Israeli volunteers, medical staff, doctors, paramedics, and nurses from Israel.
The delivery, being shipped Friday, will be distributed in three countries, Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Guinea. American nurses are playing a National Day of Action today to demand better protection and training against Ebola. This is VOA News. One day after the head of the African Union urged a quick transition back to civilian rule in Burkina Faso, Senegalese President Macky Sall, also in Ouagadougou, expressed hope the army now in charge and civil society groups will approve a framework for a transitional government. Mr. Sall, representing the regional bloc ECOWAS, said he remains hopeful a concerted decision will be taken soon. He was joined by his Togolese counterpart in meeting interim military leader Lieutenant Colonel Isaac Zida. The army took over the country after violent protests forced longtime President Blaise Compaoré from power last month. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan says he'll seek a second full term as head of Africa's most populous nation and number one oil producer. Mr. Jonathan made the expected announcement Tuesday at a rally in the capital Abuja, acknowledging his first term was punctuated by numerous challenges, including the Islamist insurgency of Boko Haram.
Our stewardship has not been without challenges. We have had to deal with the wave of insurgency that has swept through some parts of our dear country. Only yesterday, government science secondary school in Yobe State was bombed by insurgents.
Mr. Jonathan referring to Monday's attack in which 48 people, mostly students, were killed, nearly 8 others wounded, in an attack suspected to have been carried out by Boko Haram. Mr. Jonathan said Boko Haram's 5-year insurgency has cast a dark cloud over Nigeria, but added we will surely win the war against terror. He has come under intense criticism for failing to stop the group. It has killed thousands in the past 5 years and seized control of towns in the northeast for what it calls an Islamic caliphate. Some 50,000 mourners Tuesday filled Zambia's Hero Stadium for the funeral of President Michael Sata, who died 2 weeks ago in London following a long illness. Among those in attendance was Nkosazana Zuma, chairwoman of the African Union.
His hands-on approach, his accessibility to ordinary people, and his commitment to improve services for the people are some of the qualities that Michael Sata took into office after his election as President of the Republic in 2011.
Several other African leaders were among the attendees who filled the stadium to capacity, including the heads of state of Zimbabwe, Kenya, Madagascar, and Namibia. Mr. Sata died October 28. For months, officials in the Southern African nation denied he was sick, although he made several trips abroad for medical help. Families of some 34 striking South African miners shot dead back in 2012 called Tuesday for police who fired on them to be prosecuted as a judicial inquiry into what is known as the Marikana massacre neared its end. Police involved in the country's bloodiest security incident since apartheid say they were acting in self-defense. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, November 12, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan announces his re-election bid.
The clearest evidence that we can find is that the majority of the Nigerian people are solidly behind them. His party is behind him. He remains the main candidate in the 2015 presidential election.
Ruben Abate is the spokesman for Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan. In Liberia, two-time presidential candidate and football legend George Oppong-Weah announces his candidacy for the Maserato County Senate seat. And South Sudan says a power-sharing proposal by regional leaders is a non-starter for a transitional government.
I'm here to inform you that this document is out of question. It was just a proposal which was presented, and that proposal has been rejected. It is a non-starter.
Michael Makuei is South Sudan's information minister. Uganda and a South American country have turned the menace of plastic containers into an economic advantage. And a Moroccan rapper who sings against corruption is expected to be released from prison today, Wednesday. Those stories plus Marco Uman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A spokesman for Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan says the president will win re-election in next February's general polls because his policies enjoy overwhelming support from all Nigerians. Ruben Abate says the ruling People's Democratic Party remains the strongest and united party in Nigeria. This came after Mr. Jonathan announced on Tuesday that he will seek a second full term as head of Africa's most populous country. But his opponents have criticized him for failing to stop the five-year Boko Haram insurgency. They also say Nigeria's economy under Mr. Jonathan has hurt the middle class the most. Abate says Nigeria's economy under President Jonathan has grown consistently to between 6-7% a year.
I will draw your attention to the overwhelming support that President Jonathan enjoys among Nigerians. The clearest evidence that we can find is that the majority of the Nigerian people are solidly behind him. His party is behind him. He remains the main candidate in the 2015 presidential election. Everybody in the PDP endorsed him at all levels. He was, in fact, offered by the party the right of first refusal. And what he has done, which culminated in the event yesterday, was to thank the party and all his supporters and to say, well, I thank you very much. I've accepted the offer and I'm representing myself to serve the people of Nigeria. And don't forget that the nomination form that he picked up, the money was contributed by ordinary people. What that shows is faith in his ability, support for his leadership, appreciation of what he has been able to do for Nigerians, the commitment that he has shown, the purposeful leadership that he has demonstrated, his humility, his character, his persona, and the great achievements of his administration for the benefit of the Nigerian people.
Let me begin first with the economy. I think it was former President Obasanjo who said earlier this year that the economic situation in Nigeria under President Jonathan reminded him of the days of dictator Sani Abacha, where the middle class was destroyed.
It is a fact that under President Jonathan, the Nigerian economy is doing very well. The economy is growing, has been growing consistently at between 6-7%, which is unprecedented. With the rebasing of the Nigerian economy under President Jonathan's watch, Nigeria became the leading investment destination in Africa, the 26th largest economy in the world, and the largest economy also in Africa. Under President Jonathan, our GDP has gone up, so it is not true to say that the middle class in Nigeria is shrinking. The middle class in Nigeria is thriving, the economy is doing very well, and Nigeria is a preferred investment destination.
It was last month that the army and the presidency announced an agreement with Boko Haram and that the school girls that were abducted will be free. Since then, nothing has happened. Was there ever an agreement with Boko Haram to release the girls?
Well, it is not true that, the president made such categorical declarations, as you have tried to point out. Certain officers of government reported to Nigerians that some negotiation was going on, brokered by the president of Chad. And the government was quite optimistic, considering the assurances that it had received, that something very concrete may come out of that. Now, government's commitment is to ensure that those girls that were abducted from Chibok are freed and that they return home safely to their parents. The president, in particular, had always made it clear that, you know, solving the problem of terrorism, putting an end to the threat of terror, is a collective responsibility. Our government welcomes the option of dialogue to find a solution to the problem. And it is within that context that the government decided to encourage the intervention by the government of Chad. The government did not announce categorically that this is the outcome at this particular time. But we hope that that will lead to the release of the girls.
Ruben Abate is the spokesman for Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. For more on Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan's official announcement to run for re-election, viewers Chris Stein in Abuja reports Mr. Jonathan will face off against a new opposition coalition.
Goodluck Jonathan's plan to run for a second term as president of Nigeria has been among the country's biggest open secrets for months. So why did he wait until almost 3 months before the election to announce his candidacy? Jibrin Ibrahim, director of the Center for Democracy and Development in Abuja, says Mr. Jonathan had planned to declare his candidacy earlier in the year after touring the country, but the fight against the Boko Haram insurgency and the group's kidnapping of more than 200 schoolgirls from the northeastern town of Chibok in April sidetracked his plans.
There was a large outcry against that. So that's why he suspended the zonal tour at the end of which he was to make the announcement. Right now, he had to make his declaration because the timetable has come for party primaries, and it's necessary for him to openly admit what he had wanted to do all along, which is to contest for a second term.
Mr. Jonathan's main opponent will likely come from the All Progressives Congress, a coalition of opposition parties formed last year. The APC is seen as the biggest threat to Mr. Jonathan's People's Democratic Party, which has held power since the restoration of democracy in 1999. But the APC has done little to distinguish itself from its opponent, says Clement Nwankwo, executive director of the Abuja-based nonprofit Policy and Legal Advocacy Center.
The opposition party has not been able to concretize a message for the election, a message that appeals to people. It hasn't come up with alternative programs that people can see and make a difference in terms of select in terms of the difference between themselves and the president who is in office.
With a population of over 173 million people of different ethnicities spread across 36 states and divided nearly evenly between Muslims and Christians, and Nwankwo says people are likely to choose their candidates based on where they're from or where they pray, rather than whether they're the best qualified to run the country. Nigeria's presidential elections are scheduled for February 14th of next year. Chris Stein for VOA News, Abuja.
In Liberia, two-time presidential candidate and football legend George Oppong-Weah says he's a candidate for the Senate seat of Maserato County in the forthcoming special senatorial election scheduled for later this year. Weah, founder of Liberia's main opposition Congress for Democratic Change, CDC, had recently been serving as Liberia's peace ambassador. The Maserato County senatorial race is crowded with some prominent named candidates, including one of President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's sons, Robert. But Weah says having won the county in the last two presidential elections against President Sirleaf, and without underestimating the other candidates, he's certain of a victory.
I ran against the most powerful woman in Africa, as stated by many of you, prelates, and the first woman female president, you know, and she could not beat me in Maserato County. So I don't think those who are running against me will beat me. I don't want to be complacent, and I'm working very hard to regain my territory. So I'm aware that it's crowded, you know, but again, I have my own strategy, you know, to conquer Maserato County.
Before you made this announcement, there were rumors that Ambassador Weah is not going to run because he has been paid by the president's son not to enter the race.
Mr. Botti, I hope you recorded me. No one ever tried to bribe me or told me they want to give me money to leave a race. I don't get into that kind of conversation with anybody. You know, and then Winston Tubman can attest to that. Because when Winston Tubman became the leader of the party, it was party decision. He did not give me a dime. You understand? This is a man that I respected. He's a diplomat. When our party strategy brought Winston Tubman on board, Emperor Brumskin and all the strategy, and our people felt that Winston Tubman was the best choice. So Brumskin did not get the ticket. So Winston Tubman got on the ticket, and he asked me to be his deputy. So that I don't go around extracting money from people for leadership. No, it's not what CDC was built upon. CDC is a party that was built to represent our people, and each and every Liberian has the right if they have the confidence of the people.
You know, lately there have been some criticism of you, Ambassador Weah, because of some issues within your party, the Congress for Democratic Change. There are some who have criticized you of lacking leadership. What do you have to say?
Well, this is a fallacy. It's a political gimmick, and I'm not going to dwell in that. In every political party, there's internal wrangling. You know, I mean, even the Unity Party today, we have more than three different groups in Unity Party. And all that, but I'm not going to continue to give relevance to those false allegations. CDC is an institution. We have bylaws, and our constitution protects everyone.
Now that you have declared you want to be senator of Masurado County, what happens to your presidential ambition?
I'm sure you are aware that presidential elections will be in 2017. So we're talking about senatorial race now, and then the future is 2017. So our party have a strategy. If it means that I would be on that ticket in 2017, then I will. If the party decides that they will come over another candidate, I will be part of that strategy.
That was two-time Liberian presidential candidate and football legend George Oppong Weah. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. It is Wednesday morning, November 12, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. South Sudan Information Minister Michael McQuay says the government is firmly against a proposal by regional leaders last week that President Salva Kiir should share power in a transitional government with a prime minister who would probably be opposition leader Riek Machar. The proposal was made at a summit of the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD. As Philip Aliu reports from Juba, McQuay dismisses the idea as a non-starter.
McQuay says mediators from IGAD surprised the government team when they presented a new proposal on how power will be shared equally between the president and prime minister in a transitional government. McQuay says the proposal goes against what was agreed to at a high-level meeting in August. Then regional leaders agreed that the president will be head of state and government, and the newly created post of prime minister will hold no executive powers. McQuay says IGAD heads of state and government who were at the summit in Addis Ababa last week rejected the proposal that the president and prime minister would share power.
I'm here to inform you that this document is out of question. It was just a proposal which was presented, and that proposal has been rejected. It is a non-starter. So we should not disturb yourself by quoting this document, because there is nothing in it actually. Instead, it created more confusion.
McQuay says the government will not accept this proposal because it will turn South Sudan into, quote, testing ground, unquote, for new principles of governance.
In the world, there is nothing called joint appointment. You appoint in consultation with or with the consent of somebody. But there is no joint appointment, because when you make a joint appointment, it means that the order of appointment must be read and must be signed by the two people. Government is not a company, so that it is run that way.
McQuay says the communique issued at the end of the IGAD summit is misleading. The statement says member states would intervene in South Sudan to protect lives should the two parties fail to respect the latest commitment to the January cessation of hostilities deal. He says the clause about outside intervention was amended after the two sides signed the document. He warns that outside intervention in South Sudan could cause the conflict to spread beyond South Sudan borders and inflame the entire region. But McQuay says the government is nevertheless prepared to make concessions and reach a final agreement to end the 11-month-old conflict that has killed at least 10,000 people and displaced nearly 2 million others. Among those concessions, he says, are that former government workers, including members of parliament, will be allowed to return to their jobs and represent their constituencies. He also says soldiers and military officers who defected from the SPLA will be reintegrated into the armed forces. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
People around the world use disposable plastic containers for water, food, and other content because of their practicality and lightweight. But if not discarded properly, these plastics can litter populated areas, pollute water systems, and create environmental damage. Plastic waste is a real problem in many poor countries. Zlatika Hoke reports on how Uganda and a South American country have turned the menace into an advantage.
The water drainage system in Uganda's capital, Kampala, is providing a livelihood for hundreds of people who collect carelessly thrown away trash. David Kibanda manages about 10 workers who collect up to 10 tons of plastic waste a week and sell it for about 7 U.S. cents per kilogram. Kibanda says the people he supervises would otherwise be jobless. Now they make a living while helping to clean up the city.
Go to other places where they don't pick these things. Go to the drainage system. They have blocked.
More than half of the trash in Uganda's capital is left uncollected by understaffed and underfunded municipal services. Much of it ends up in drainage channels, natural watercourses, streets, and undeveloped plots. Environment authorities say that about 600 tons of plastic are discarded in Kampala every day. Private companies such as the Plastic Recycling Institute, run by a South African beverage company, have stepped in to help reduce the waste by employing people to collect plastic waste for recycling. The Kampala plant recycles 650 kilograms of plastic per hour and more than 3 million kilograms annually, which means that much less ends up in Uganda's environment.
I would say it is working. If at all there were no recycling plants, that means all the plastics we are collecting right now would be in the rivers and streets.
The plastics are sorted, washed, and processed for the manufacturing of other plastic products, including floor tiles and roof slates. Environmentalists often point out that conserving nature and its resources need not be expensive. Mostly, it just takes initiative and persistence to develop good habits. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
The Moroccan rapper known as Mr. Crazy is expected to be released today, Wednesday, from a three-month prison term that he has been serving for singing about police corruption, drugs, youth unemployment, and more. The 17-year-old Othman Atik was found guilty of insulting an institution and inciting drug use in August and sentenced to 3 months in jail. Human Rights Watch Deputy Director for the Middle East and North Africa Division, Eric Goldstein, tells Ricky Stryak that Morocco's actions are a violation of Atik's freedom of expression.
Atik is from a gritty area of Casablanca, and he sings about what he knows best, which is the life of teenage boys who don't have jobs, have an outlook on the future, and get involved in drugs, petty crime, hanging out, doing nothing, drinking. And that's what he sings about, much in the manner of some rappers in the United States and in France. And the words in the videos are explicit. You know, they talk about crime and drugs, and perhaps this is why the Moroccan authorities decided to muzzle him.
You mentioned it as well, that his songs and music videos depict the lives of specifically sometimes Casablanca's unemployed youth. Do you think that one reason he was made a target is because that is a sensitive issue?
The charge against him is harming public morality. He's singing about real social problems. Anybody who visits Casablanca knows that he's talking about a reality in that country, and shooting the messenger isn't going to solve the problem. This is the reflex of the government. He's the second rapper who talks about this milieu to go to jail.
So both Atik and another rapper known as Al Haked have been both jailed, and specifically sometimes for songs that were deemed to be insulting to the police. Do human rights experts such as yourself believe there are serious issues that need to be addressed in terms of the Moroccan police?
The problem is with the Moroccan law. The Moroccan Constitution of 2011 proclaims that there is the freedom to create artwork, there's the freedom to express oneself, and yet the laws that are on the books and that continue to be enforced penalize various types of expression, including so-called insults against the police. Now, in this case, and in the case of El Hakid, both rappers talk about police corruption. Their defense in court is they're talking about those policemen and women who are corrupt. They're not talking about the police as an institution. If Morocco wants to implement the constitution that it adopted with so much fanfare 3.5 years ago, it has to abolish laws to put people in prison for basically criticizing state institutions, state bodies such as police.
That was Eric Goldstein, Human Rights Watch Deputy Director for the Middle East and North Africa Division. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Washington. Minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. Morocco's Hicham El Garouj has been inducted in the IAAF Hall of Fame, the World Athletics Body revealed in Monaco on Tuesday. He first caught world attention when he claimed the 5,000-meter bronze medal at the 1992 World Junior Championships in Seoul, South Korea. El Garouj went on to become the world's most accomplished middle-distance runner of all time. Besides winning several IAAF 1,500-meter Grand Prix finals, El Garouj pulled a 1,500-meter gold medal hat-trick at the World Athletics Championships between 1997 and 2003. He was the world indoor 1500-meter champion in 1995 and 1997, as well as the 3000-meter champion in 2001. El Garouj holds the world outdoor and indoor records in both the 1500 meters and 1 mile. El Garouj is a three-time World Male Athlete of the Year between 2001 and 2003. The living legend crowned his illustrious career with a 1500-meter and 5000-meter gold medals at the 2004 Athens Olympics. The latter was El Garouj's last competitive race before retiring at the age of 30. Now, just 10 years later, at the age of 40, El Garouj set another world first, becoming the youngest man inducted in the IAAF Hall of Fame. Turning to volleyball, hosts Egypt dismissed Morocco in three straight sets. Tunisia outclassed Libya in a similar fashion as Algeria beat Rwanda 3-0 at the Africa Men's Under-23 Volleyball Championships in Sharm el-Sheikh on Tuesday. With four wins each, Tunisia and Egypt claim Africa's two spots at the World Under-23 Championships. Algeria is third, followed by Libya, Rwanda, then Morocco. Today, Wednesday, Algeria play Libya. Morocco face Rwanda before the grand finale between Tunisia and Egypt. Finally, in football, Morocco will not stage the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations, the Confederation of African Football disclosed in Cairo, Egypt on Tuesday. Morocco had requested a postponement of the Nations Cup, fearing the spread of Ebola virus to their country. After several consultations with stakeholders, especially the World Health Organization, CAF insists there were adequate measures in place to prevent the spread of Ebola to Morocco. The Moroccans declined to stage the Nations Cup in January. CAF assures that the three-week Nations Cup will go ahead as scheduled from the 17th of January. They are studying bids submitted by countries interested in staging the Nations Cup. CAF will name the successful bid shortly. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Wednesday morning, November 12th.
Good morning, Daybreak Africa. This is William Koklo. I speak to you from Zaza Lofakante, Liberia. I'd like to commend Ambassador Josh M. Weir for his resignation as Liberia's peace ambassador. I think it is necessary for his resignation because those leading the governments of these countries are not serious for reconciliation. Thank you and have a great day.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. And that's it for this Wednesday, November 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford and reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post-editor Mark Ouma, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping that you will have a very good day.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. And on Fridays, you can also hear my 30-minute show at 17:30 UTC. On the internet, like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Check voaafrica.com for the addresses and enjoy the show.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for VOA's discussion program, Reporters Roundtable, every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas and take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA.